Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, of course, our guest for the first hour is going to be Barry Shamish, and he's going to bring us up to date on what is taking place in Israel today, as we find certainly that they are smuggling large numbers of more sophisticated missiles into Hamas, and of course that has to, in Palestine, has to be done with the consent of the Egyptian government, which we are funding, and America is funding Egypt, which is funding and helping Hamas, which is going to attack Israel. Doesn't really make any sense. Certainly, Hezbollah is accumulating weapons, probably getting them through both Syria and Iran. But where are Syria and Iran getting sophisticated missiles? It's not something you build in your backyard. Why, of course, they're getting them from Russia. And where did Russia get the technology and getting the funding? And do you realize we're still pouring money into Russia under one guise or another as they are providing the missiles that are going through Iran and Syria to Hezbollah, which will soon be used on Israel? Why the technology and much of the funding comes from the United States, as it always has. A lot of these things that go on just don't make sense. And those of you who subscribe to my newsletter will be getting your March newsletter one of these days, and I said that goes into how all during the Vietnam War the United States was funding Russia, that was funding the North Vietnam, that was funding the Viet Cong, that were killing American boys in the rice paddies and villages of South Vietnam. It's sort of like deja vu all over again, as we see the tragedy that I fear lies in fate for Israel. So with that as the background, Barry Shamish, thanks so very much for being with us tonight.
Well, it's always good. I think it's very therapeutic. I'm not feeling well this week, and I'm going to be even more depressed about the situation there. I actually gave thought of going back to Israel and just watching it collapse. Maybe I can save my children, but I'll tell you, that place is very, very screwy. It's not a place you go for a holiday if you're very charmed. You could end up like not getting... Never leaving the country. So I'm very, very torn every which way. Now, one of the problems in my writing is that people assume that everything is a conspiracy, and I'm just kind of looking for a conspiratorial side to everything. And I got to tell you, that is not true. When I hear news, it sticks in my mind. I assume it's telling me the truth. I assume there are accidents, and I assume that at the very beginning, anyways, that errors were made and it was random. But in Israel, it's not like that. Even though I assume, very shortly afterwards, you see that there was a murder. You see who the person was. Oh, the music.
I'm afraid the music does come, Barry. Hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Shamish, who's an investigative reporter, has written a number of fabulous and fascinating books on the situation in Egypt, in Israel, and of course he has a great wealth of knowledge. You'll certainly benefit from listening to him. We'll be back in just a moment here to explore what's really going on in the Near East today. Well, Barry, go ahead, pick the story up.
Well, now I'm going to do one where once again I was proven totally right. Now, for years, I've been interviewing old people from the Irgun and getting them to tell me what life really was like, not the labor Zionist propaganda history, but real-life Irgunist history. And something always struck me was how many of them hated Teddy Kollek. They said that Teddy Kollek was the reason they were sent to Africa. He was a snitch for the British. And so I called Teddy Kollek a British spy.
Now, before you go on, please tell our listeners who Teddy Kollek was, because some of them may not know.
Well, he, for 28 years, was mayor of Jerusalem.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
Now, he died a few months ago, and finally, lo and behold, the British unveiled who Teddy Kollek was. Some archive let it out that he was a spy for the Brits. And, by the way, that changes his view in the eyes of many, many Israelis who remember the British with a great deal of hatred. And that's what he was. He was a British spy. He sent Jews to Africa for belonging to the Irgun. And he was so revered. And here I was telling folks, you don't know who this guy really was. Guys, quit revering Teddy Kollek. This was a snitch. This man is responsible for Jews being arrested. And no one listened to me because he was so respected. Well, what do you know? I was right. One more little detail of my writing comes true. Now, what I was thinking of before going on the show, I'm so down with this flu and with everything, and I was just thinking, what should we talk about? And it occurred to me, everything is a conspiracy in Israel. That it's not my fault that I write conspiratorially. It's actual fact. Now, I'll give you an example. Was the killing of Judge Adi Azar. And I'm going to give you the reaction of the Shabak when I get information. It's very, very scary. By the way, Judge Adar is in my new book, Shabtai Tzvi, Labor Zionism and the Holocaust. Go to lulu.com, lulu.com, write my name, CHAMISH, in search, and you'll see all my books.
Hold that thought, Barry. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is going to be talking about the death of this judge in Israel, and he's written about him in the past. What's the judge's name again?
Adi Azar.
All right, fine. So you tell our listeners a little bit about him. You wrote about him in your book on the labor, Zion, on labor
yes.
Zionism. Go ahead.
Yes, I certainly did. And this is it's the only judge ever killed in Israeli history. He was, it was shocking to the nation that someone would kill a judge. But what was more shocking was who they accused of killing the judge. This small-time petty crook from Georgia was set up by another Georgian to take the blame. A perfectly innocent man is sitting in prison for killing Judge Adi Azar. Now, get this. Here was the reason that he killed Azar, according to the police, because he wanted to shorten his prison term. So I'm saying to myself, you get to shorten your prison term by killing a judge. You know, it was just so wacky, this killing. Nothing about it made any sense. So I just started looking around, and I find out that this Judge Azar was an honest judge. He was after Arafat. He handled two major cases of people who were wounded in terror attacks. And he made Arafat pay. More than that, he made Arafat in public court, his representative, whoever sat in the public court for the PLO, to reveal how much money they have sitting in Israeli banks. This judge was breaking through all the terrorism through his courts. if you were in a terror attack and you wanted compensation from the person who gave the order, you went to Judge Azar's court and you got a very, very good reading. He was really screwing up the peace process. Now, that's when it occurred to me, if he's doing this with our peace process partners are in the terror business, well, then they killed him. They killed him. And then I started looking at Aptishieli is the name of the man who was accused from his jail cell, no less, of ordering another Georgian to go out and shoot the judge, and he brought in still another Georgian. It became a very funny chapter in a way, if you think murder is funny. But read that chapter in my book, How They Murdered Judge Azar. It's Keystone Cops. It's the Shabak at their very worst. It was a lousy, stupid plan. They went too far. So I gave a speech in Jerusalem. And at the Root and Branch Society, I usually got about 100 people coming out. That night there were, 70 people, but a good 10 of them I had never seen before. They were soldiers and only spoke Hebrew. The next day at 11 in the morning, the attorney for Aptishieli, the Georgian accused of killing Judge Adi Azar, committed suicide. He put a bullet through his head. David Weiner. This man was going to be married in 2 weeks. Okay? The police said that he killed himself because he felt betrayed by the court system. They got to him. They assumed that he talked to me before I gave my speech, because I got every detail right, how they killed Judge Azar. I broke down the stupidity of it was as good as Rabin. Aptishieli didn't do it. He was set up before the judge was even hit. And once again, somebody died because of me, because David Weiner would be alive. I am certain they told my story, and they said it must have been that American attorney, David Weiner, because the next day he was dead. He was shot once through the temple. And I knew, my speech did it. I know that. And I know it from another Shabak agent who died after I wrote something. I wrote something called They're Talking. And it was these people from the Shabak talked to me. And then I never saw them again. But they gave me amazing information. They were rebels. And they told me addresses of where the Shabak has a safe house in Ramot. And they the works. I wrote this down, and the next day, after I published it, a Shabak agent named Edry was killed by his Arab handler, and I knew they assumed he was one of the people who talked to me. No. He wasn't, by the way.
And the Shabbat is sort of what, like the Jewish
Secret
CIA?
Service. Yeah, Secret Service.
Okay, go ahead.
They also guard the lives of the various ministers. They're a combination of FBI Secret Service.
All right, go ahead. Fine.
Now I just said to myself, I'm responsible for Edry getting killed. He didn't do anything. He may have told other people. He may have shot off his mouth, but his Arab handler had a gun and shot him beside two other Shabak agents sitting in the car who didn't defend him. The problem with my work is that it is all a conspiracy in Israel. It simply is a conspiracy. Now, the big one, the really, really big one that almost blew everything apart, and that was the murder of Wayne Owens. Now, they murdered a congressman in Tel Aviv. That was Peres' voice.
And, of course, this was an American congressman who had just come over to Israel. What was he into? What was he trying to expose? Or why was he in danger to them?
He wasn't exposing. He had his own... He was part of the crime. I guess... Now, here's the story. Wayne Owens still does have his own Middle Eastern economic website for hope and future, and it's still run by Daniel Abraham. That is Peres's really slimy partner. Daniel Abraham was the person who gave Wayne Owens the use of his private jet to fly into Tel Aviv from Damascus. We could talk about Pelosi delivering a message later, all right? I'll even write that down. But nonetheless, Daniel Abraham started Slim Fast Foods. He had a private jet. He gave Wayne Owens use of the private jet. Wayne Owens was dead. They found his body on December 18th of the year 2002 on the beach behind the Tel Aviv Hilton. This was a person who was murdered in Israel, and the reason was the Ginnisar scandal.
And of course, he was an American congressman who was on the take then.
He was on the take. And believe me, I've discussed this case. It's so important for you to know the kind of thugs that the poor Jewish people have to live under. These people kill, and they kill often, by the way. Now, Wayne Owens still has an economic website, and he does business with Arafat. He did business with Arafat. Arafat died of AIDS, and I'm not even going to go into the conspiracy there, but people are still surprised to hear that. The fact of the matter is that Wayne Owens was trapped because of the Ginnisar scandal. Now, let me explain the Ginnisar scandal. Yossi Ginnisar was the deputy head of the Shabak. He was a liar and a blackmailer. He ended up, with the information he had, he was placed by every prime minister. Only Netanyahu hesitated. All the rest made him head of the negotiations with the PLO. Now, what Yossi Ginnisar did is he opened a $300 million bank account for Yasser Arafat, and the accountant he used, his name was Frank. Ozrad Lev. Ozrad Lev went to Mariv. He couldn't live with himself anymore. He told the whole story of how Ginnisar used him as the accountant to open up the Swiss bank account and used him to open a trail of false leads, phony companies to hide where this money came from. Now, the CEO of these companies, in most cases, was an American named Stephen Schwartz. Keep that in Stephen Cohen. I'm so sorry. Stephen Cohen. He appears on CNN occasionally, giving the advice from the Middle East. He was part of the Ginnisar scandal. He's a crook. Okay, he was in charge. He was the CEO of a bunch of straw companies used to hide Arafat's theft of the Palestinian people. That was Stephen Cohen. The next time you see him on CNN, write a letter to CNN and say, take this crook off the air. He was implicated in the Ginnisar scandal, which mysteriously went away, by the way. Now, the next person is Daniel Abraham, who was going to get into a lot of trouble over the Ginnisar scandal. Once again, why do I say, Stephen Cohen was Daniel Abraham's partner in the business administration of Wayne Owens' fund. They were his business partners, Stephen Cohen and Daniel Abraham. The whole Ginnisar scandal was going to tie Wayne Owens to the scandal through Stephen Cohen. They were going to connect Wayne Owens to the theft from the Palestinian people of hundreds of millions of dollars in only one bank account. This was the mess that Wayne Owens walked into when he arrived in Israel on his last day. I hear music.
And that's it. And, of course, that we assume is the reason why he was found dead there behind his hotel about 5 years ago. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, Barry, go right ahead.
Well, in my book, and by the way, this is also Subtitles the labor Zionism and the Holocaust.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Of money, certainly from the Americans and from the Israelis, and he wasn't using that to help the Palestinian people. He had a $300 million, a private bank account over there in Sweden, probably in Switzerland, but of course Arafat was, getting to be extremely wealthy at the expense of the Palestinian people, and when it became obvious that there was this movement by these people in Israel to get rid of him, why, of course, the congressman died. The Palestinian was working with him, died, and so all sorts of strange things were happening. And this was, what, about 2002?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, all I'm trying to point out is that I'm not writing conspiracies. These are very, very, there are so many deaths in Israel. So many people that shouldn't be dying. Another one that I got started, and you can see the Shabak at work always trying to repair the damage that I'm doing, was the murder of Raful Eitan. He was the chief of staff during the Lebanon War. He was my chief of staff, and he was the last person I ever voted for. He had a party called Somet, and the end of Somet, I mean, that party, two of their members crossed the Knesset and joined Rabin so that the Oslo Accord could be voted through, and then the party finally died when Raful was caught stealing $400,000 from party funds to build his mistress a new house. And that was it for that party. You're talking about a disappointment. They're all corrupt. And this is something people don't understand. I never voted again. That was it. Once that party was proven to be corrupt and rotten, there was no point in supporting anyone. But nonetheless, Raful was starting to open his mouth again about Oslo, and he was saying what a disaster it was. He suddenly became very responsible. And then one morning, he went out to the Ashdod Pier, where he fell in the water and died. Okay, it was a very rainy morning, except I found out stuff. That morning, his Shabak officer phoned him up and warned him to be very careful. Then I said to myself, why does he have a Shabak officer? For what reason? He's been out of politics for 15 years. And finally, it hits. Yediot Ahronot prints a picture of Raful's car on its front page. That car, they said, was ruined by a wave. And I'm telling you, I have been in Israel for 30-odd years. I've never heard of a car getting smashed by a wave as that car was smashed. Somebody went after Raful. There's no question somebody got him, trapped him, and dropped. Remember, there are cranes. This is a port, a pier. You can drop things from a crane because his roof was caved in and no wave did that. And most people who looked at that picture said the same thing, that what kind of a wave causes damage like that. And I would say to people, you live in Tel Aviv, you live near the ocean. When's the last time you recall a car being smashed from the roof down by a wave? And, well, some people say, yes, but it was a very stormy morning. I said, any wave in Israel, you ever heard of a car being crushed from the roof down? And I convinced an awful lot of people. And then, and I sent out that picture all over the internet, so that people could see the car. Somebody killed Raful. And then his wife gets on the radio and says that was the third car he wrecked in a year and a half because of waves. Somebody told her to say that. The third car he's ruined because of the waves at Ashdod Port. That's what the wife said. Believe me. That's three more than any other Israeli. You would think he'd learn. I mean, what the heck? After the first car goes, you have to waste two more on waves? Oh, I hear the music.
Well, you know, it's amazing how gullible people are. I mean, we've seen the same thing in America with Lee Harvey Oswald. Why did he kill President Kennedy? Well, we don't know why. He wanted to be important, that's why he did. And why did Ruby kill Oswald? Well, he saw a billboard that said something about impeaching Earl Warren, and because he saw that billboard that talked about impeaching Earl Warren, he became furious, and he decided he was going to kill Oswald. So he walks into the police station, surrounded by police officers, pulls out a gun and kills Oswald. And then shortly thereafter, he says, I'm going to tell you what really happened. He suddenly develops cancer and dies in prison. Well, this is Dr. Stan. So it's not just the Israeli people that are pretty gullible. The American people are gullible as well. And unfortunately, nobody's there except to point out that most of what we believe here in America isn't true. And most of what the Israeli people believe isn't true. All these people are not simply dying by accident. Go ahead, pick up the story, Barry.
Well, I'm trying to tell people a story, hopefully to somehow save the country. It's so, so dishonest. And children, they're learning lessons from these rulers. Our children have nobody to admire. Nobody. Everybody is crooked. And it's apparently they're using the justice system to get their own enemies. It's not like we got a great police department. We've got ourselves an attorney general who chooses who to turn the screws on. And it's now our president, it's now our prime minister, all of them, our previous prime minister and his two sons. Everyone's a crook. Everyone but Paris. I mean, this man can kill and kill and kill, and he does. And yet, the people of Israel will not object to him becoming the next president or prime minister at age 84. Yet, he is a mafia. Well, he's the godfather. He killed. Now, I got to tell you, I'm extremely depressed. Partly it's the flu, but Israel was my home. It's a place I felt comfortable in most of my life. And then somebody decided to bring Oslo peace. And that Oslo peace, the first thing I wrote is it is a war accord. Nobody gives their worst enemy 50,000 rifles and 1 million rounds. Nobody does that. You don't give the PLO our weapons. And as soon as I saw that this deal meant arming the PLO from our own arsenal, I said, guys, they are going to attack us someday. Those bullets will kill Jews. And since Oslo, many thousands of Jews have been shot by the bullets we provided. Remember that. It was, by the way, it was Peres's idea, again, to provide the weapons. Remember, every bad thing in Oslo was Rabin versus Peres. Rabin was trying to keep it on track and keep it sane. And by the way, he was the one who brought Oslo to us via George Bush the father. He told that to William Sapphire. He said, I never wanted to go into Oslo. Bush made me.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry Shamis is giving us the background of what's going on in Israel. He was talking about Rabin. You remember, of course, it was the Rabin who was assassinated, supposedly. Of course, he was shot from behind by an assassin, but all the bullets just happened to end up going in from in front when they did the autopsy. But under any circumstances, Rabin was forced to go into the Oslo Accord, and Barry was just saying that Rabin had actually told an American reporter, I believe it was William Sapphire, I never wanted to go into this Oslo Accord, and suddenly gave up so much of Israel's land. I was forced to by Bush. That would be George Herbert Walker Bush. And what really people don't understand is that everybody wants to say, oh, it's the Zionists who are running Washington, D.C., and of course that's simply a cover. It is the Council on Foreign Relations crowd under the globalists that are running Israel and are going to destroy Israel, if given the opportunity, and in the process of destroying it today, putting them into a totally vulnerable position, financing the Egyptians who are financing Hamas and helping Hamas, and of course, certainly we're helping to supply money to Russia that's supplying weapons to Iran and Syria that are being given to Hezbollah in preparation for the coming war on Israel. But people can't see it. They can't see it because nobody points it out. Go ahead, pick up the story, Barry.
Well, here is why it was George Bush. Oh, incidentally, before I go into that, Rabin's anesthesiologist was murdered in his car. He was shot through the head. It was a rub-out. This was a month ago. Daniel Neve. It's dead. Nobody in Israel is asking, Who killed Rabin's anesthesiologist? The last person who he was in the operation to save Rabin. And no one knows and no one cares that he was rubbed out in his car. This is how bad things have become in Israel. It's just so rotten. Now, I have done, over the years, a lot of studies of the Iqlov doctors. And my goodness, they wiped out a whole family of them, claiming that they had carbon monoxide poisoning from because a bird put up a nest overnight and clogged a furnace, and they all died of carbon monoxide poisoning. This woman was head of the ER at Iqlov Hospital during the 1980s, was now working at a health plan there. They got rid of her whole family, Dalia Ayel.
Was she there at the time they brought Rabin in? Is that the main?
I don't know, but I know she's heard things. They're all heads of departments, getting big trouble there. And that's it. And I wrote a very simple story. I said, birds don't put up nests in January. Okay? The family was killed in January. I said, birds don't nest in January. It was that simple. And I exploded the whole myth about the Ayel family. I've been watching the murders over the years. It's horrifying. Two of the doctors who attended Rabin, Kluger and Goodman, had something very similar to AIDS. They started wasting away. Nobody, their biopsies were sent worldwide to find out what they had. They came out of it, but it was one heck of a warning. Dr. Goodman and Kluger, and I found this out from doctors who worked at Iqlov and said, you better watch it. That hospital is haunted by the murder of Rabin. And since then, you have an enormous number of doctors from Iqlov who have been either killed or very, very sick. And again, this isn't made up. It is a conspiracy. That hospital, don't get sick in Israel. I made a mistake. I had a car slam into me full speed. I never saw anything but the lights. This guy went for my door, and I was in a hospital. They gave me experimental drugs, and my wife did not sign anything. So they phoned me after I got out of the hospital and said, you have to come back and sign the form, and we want to keep in tabs with you because we gave you experimental drugs. The woman on the phone told me that. I said, well, how come I didn't know about it if they're experimental? Isn't someone supposed to sign for that? She said, you'll sign now. All over Israel, in all the hospitals, they're giving weird drugs to patients, and there have been so many dead geriatrics in Israel. It's a very, very scary hospital system, but there are two hospitals, or three, being sued now for giving experimental drugs on patients. I was one of them. And by the way, there's a real possibility that I could have another stroke, or they put something in me to make sure that I die. And I think about that all the time. I was in their hands, and very weird things were happening to me in the hospital. One of them was that I was given a drug. I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was for.
Well, of course, it sounds like, you know, you would have a cause to sue them, but then you don't want to go back to Israel to do it, and probably you brought a lawsuit, you would not get a fair trial.
I got a big problem here. I'm very lonely in America. In Israel, I was a celebrity. Here I'm not. I miss my family. Look, I got problems with Israel that I can't begin to tell you, but what I am telling you is what they're doing there. Now, I'm going to ask, I was going to finish the show, by the way, with Pollard. I was going to go into why the American neocon movement hates Israel so much. Why is it that they are determined to shove Oslo down Rabin's throat? According to Rabin, and this is what he told Sapphire, he said, George Bush told him, you're going back to Israel and you're going to prepare your people for very painful sacrifices. And that came from Rabin's mouth. Now, why are these Americans supposedly conservative? people like Bush and Baker and Weinberger, and then, of course, the neocons like Cheney and Rumsfeld. What kind of a plan are they? What are they following, and why are they following this plan? There seems to be a two-way plan. One, destroy Iraq, and the other, destroy Israel. And that always was the plan. And I've gone over this on the show with you, that I spoke with the Ron Pundak, one of the two writers of the Oslo Accord, and he said, my boss, Yossi Beilin, says he doesn't believe in borders. By the time Oslo is finished, Israel won't have borders, and then we won't have war. And I said to him, we won't have Israel either. He says, we'll have a block. We'll all get together in this block. And I, from that moment on, I've been screaming, people, you don't know, these people are nuts. This man actually said these things. Joel Bainerman was with me when we interviewed Ron Pundak in Tel Aviv. And I said, you don't know what Oslo is all about. Israel is going to be destroyed by Oslo. I've been writing this now for 13-odd years, and it's just not having much of an effect, and I'm very, very upset about that. But the fact remains, Ehud Olmert gave Pelosi, your speaker for the Democrats, a message to give to Assad in Syria. What the hell is our prime minister giving her a message? What's she doing in Syria? There's something so bad going on, because when your House Speaker shows up and says Ehud is ready to discuss the peace with you, that means Ehud said he'll give up the Golan Heights. That's what that sentence means. What is Olmert doing using her as a mouthpiece for? And secondly, who wants to give up the Golan Heights? We don't have enough trouble in the country that now we want all of the Galilee punctured by rockets. That you don't even need to use radar. You can actually see Tiberias from the Golan Heights. What's he telling Pelosi a message like that for? Now, I want you to know something. There were these meetings with the Vatican, very high-level meetings that Israel was going to discuss the Vatican's position and tax status. Israel walked out of them this week. Israel did not send a delegate. They're not dealing with the Vatican anymore. Now they're dealing with America. And you try and follow all of this happening. What is Pelosi doing in Syria? Why is she delivering Olmert's message? Now, I haven't got the answers right now, but I still have some very good questions. What is he, the Prime Minister of Palestine? He needs an American to send a message to Assad that we'll give up the Golan Heights? We've reached the point in Israel, no one, but no one cares if this country is going to make it or not. That's just one more loss to Israel, is the Golan Heights. And now I'm going to give the big one. Why are these conservatives helping Israel destroy itself?
You're talking about the neoconservatives?
Neoconservatives with names that you will remember, like Bush, Bush, Baker, Weinberger, all the people connected with Bechtel. And in the case of Weinberger Schultz, they were vice presidents of Bechtel. What happened is Pollard. Now, this is something nobody understands, why America shoved Oslo down Israel's throat. I've been saying this for ages. I spoke with Ron Pundak. He told us that Warren Christopher was on the phone to him from the moment they arrived in Oslo. Warren Christopher of the Council on Foreign Relations is important. Well, if that's true, how come Bill Clinton of the Council on Foreign Relations was so shocked in August when he supposedly discovered that the Oslo negotiations had led to a treaty and he didn't know they were taking place? Yes, he knew they were taking place. They were his discussions. And when I heard that from Ron Pundak, I knew it was all a terrible, terrible lie, and been foisted down Israel's throat. Now we get to why. The reason is Jonathan Pollard, who was not the world's greatest spy until Rafi Eitan and Bud McFarlane became his partners. Remember, Bud McFarlane. These were the people all tied up with Iran. Pollard changed a minor arms for hostage deal into a major scandal. And that's because Shimon Peres was the Prime Minister of Israel from 1984 to 1986, read Pollard's intelligence, and turned Iran-Contra into the biggest criminal empire, with Israelis supplying the Iranians with missiles, and they would be paid money, and it would go to Panama, where it would buy cocaine, and the cocaine would be sold, and that money laundered through Israel Discount Bank in Miami. Go to my website, the Barry Chamish website, the TheBarryChamishWebite. Go in the archives section, it's under media, and look at the early stuff.
Okay.
Look at my stuff on Pollard.
Barry, was that money that was laundered through the Israeli bank then used to buy weapons for the Sandinista? Or
the
I should say weapons for the Contras?
Michael Klein was arranging the dope. And yes, that was the Iran-Contra. That was the scandal. Pollard turned a minor. Pollard almost brought down the Bush regime. But he made one. I mean, look at the guy. The guy is sending Israel a picture of Bechtel Corporation's chemical weapons factory in Baghdad. And he expects Israel to do something that the Iraqis are making chemical weapons.
Well, because they're making with the material that we'd sent them. We're giving them money. We gave them the chemicals to
You've
build the chemical weapons.
You've got the Bechtel Corporation there. You're giving them the manufacturer.
Right.
Okay, now straightforward. Israel should have put an end to it, but that's not what happened. What happened is Bechtel was planning to build a pipeline from Iraq to Aqaba in Jordan because the Iranians had been blockading their oil. Bechtel agreed to build the pipeline, but Shimon Peres added something, and it was delivered by Edwin Meese. He added a major, major, major bribe. He said, "We won't bomb it, even in war, if you give $700 million to the Labor Party of Israel." Edwin Meese delivered that note. He was fired. Peres went on and on and on. He never gets in trouble. Edwin Meese, for offering the bribe, was fired. By the way, look into your old papers. This happened, I'd say in 1985 or 6. Was the Iraqi pipeline deal with Bechtel. It was a mess, but not in Israel. Peres was investigated by Abba Eben, and he was found to be the most responsible for Iran-Contra. By Abba Eben. Abba Eben never had another day in politics. Peres ruined him. It was over with. That investigation died. Peres called it a pack of lies, and it died. What happened is that the neocons got screwed. They got blackmailed by Israel, and they just said, get rid of that country. Just get rid of that country. Enough is enough. That was Peres. That was the Bechtel Corporation. But it was Caspar Weinberger who sent Pollard to jail for life. When Pollard had actually cut a deal, he revealed everything, and he expected a term of 3 years. Now he's got life because Weinberger was the vice president of Bechtel,
Schultz.
Schultz, thank you. George Schultz was the other. All of these people went on the rampage, and James Baker was not very far off the executives of Bechtel either. They all went on a rampage to destroy Israel, and was. If Pollard didn't know he was doing this, he didn't know who Peres was. Not many people do. People who listen to your show, I hope, are getting the idea now what a very sick criminal criminal mind he's got. Right now, just think that you're Weinberger, and you say to all your other right-wing conservative friends, this Israel is going to go, we're going to take it down, piece by piece, it's finished. And then James Baker tells the Saudis, it'll take us a little while. We have got to make the Israelis stupid. We got to change their thinking a bit. It might be 10 years, it might be 15, but Israel's finished. We will make the country kill itself. And this is what they've been doing. It has not come, this decision has not come from the liberals who supposedly like Palestinians. It has come from the far right. And they've been using Jews like a World Bank, Wolfensohn, and Paul Wolfowitz, and Daniel Pipes, and all these people. They've been using Jews to kill Israel.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. All right, Barry, we've got 3 minutes for you to finish up.
Oh, my. You know what? I think I finished. Well, I think you should go to lulu.com and look at my books.
All right, let's get your website out. What can they find if they do go to lulu.com?
You'll find all my books but one. I have one book, The Last Days of Israel, which I'm trying to sell. And you write me, chamish@netvision.net.il, chamish@netvision.net.il, and I'll send you The Last Days. All the rest are at Lulu right now, including my famous comedy with the Kennedys, a completely made-up version of the murder, and a very funny, and the very famous UFO book, Return of the Giants, discussing the aerial phenomena that somehow captured Israel while the Oslo Accord was being written up. So it's the whole me. Go to lulu.com and write CHAMISH under search. And the website is not Barry Chamish website.com. Go to media and look in the archives, and you'll find plenty of what we've just discussed tonight.
Well, Barry, you take care of yourself. You get over your flu, and I hope you get feeling better.
Oh, thank you. Another fine show. We'll talk again.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine.
Bye.
Our guest this evening has been Barry Chamish, and certainly if you listen to Barry very carefully, you'll get a tremendous insight into what's going on, because I certainly agree with Barry. There is an organized effort to destroy Israel, and it is being coordinated by the globalists. And, of course, the globalists come from the Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, Club of Rome, Sydney Bilderberger Complex. And many of these people would appear to be Jews, but they're really not Jews. They have a different loyalty. And this is really what's so interesting about what's going on, and really what's so tragic about what's going on. Barry talks about the assassinations in Israel, but remember, the murder of Martin Luther King. And everybody knew it was James Earl Ray. But did you ever know that the Martin Luther King's family brought a charge against somebody who had admitted he'd been involved with this? It wasn't James Earl Ray at all. And a jury and a court decided the government, U.S. government, was primarily responsible for the murder of Martin Luther King, and not a word in the controlled media. As far as the murder of Bobby Kennedy... was shot from behind, although Saran Saran was standing in front, and it's just like the murder of Rabin all over again. There really are these things that go on. They're not imaginary. Our reality is created by those people who control the media. It's time when the American people begin to think. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course it's always fun having Barry Chamish on, because Barry Chamish has lived there in Israel for so long. He has interviewed so many people. He certainly has a great knowledge of what's going on, and he calls it a conspiracy that's taking place in Israel, a conspiracy to destroy the country he loves. And I think he's absolutely right. There really are conspiracies that go on throughout the world. If you don't like the word, you simply go to the Concordance in your King James Bible and look it up, and you'll find that the word conspiracy is used over and over and over again. And behind all of the conspiracies that exist today is a conspiracy against the God of the Bible. And when you begin to understand that there really are people who have a different worldview, There is another dimension to what's going on today, and until you understand that we're involved in a truly spiritual battle being fought on a political battlefield, nothing makes sense. We hope that many of you may be interested in seeing my latest talk. It's called Forbidden Secret, and it tells of the secret that has been passed from generation to generation, from Pythagoras to Socrates to Plato to Aristotle to Alexander the Great, and that secret is still continues being passed on today. And it will, if you can access it, but I don't advise that you do. But you need to understand that it is there. But if you do, of course, you may sacrifice your eternal soul. If you have not seen The Forbidden Secret, which is available on DVD and will soon be available on video, and you'd like to know how to get that, why, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. You need, of course, to see my talk on DVD or video, or read the book Brotherhood of Darkness, which is a good introduction to what's going on, and then putting together all that I've learned in 45 years into Forbidden Secret. We have a great four-tape set with Constance Cumby, who's been studying the New Age occult movement for 27 years. We have a DVD with or video with Constance Cumby, and all of this information certainly is available through Radio Liberty. If you have not yet seen Chris Pinto's great new DVD, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, this is something that everybody who's really concerned about America needs to see, because it will explain to you what you will see there in the architecture of our nation's capital and in the buildings and in the statues that have nothing to do with Christianity. So what are they doing there? Certainly chiseled out of stone in key positions all throughout Washington, D.C. Well, certainly Chris has done a great job with that, as well as with his other previous DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And so we hope that many of you out there will be interested in learning more. And if you are interested in learning more, I suggest you call 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get understand what's really going on in the Middle East today from a spiritual point of view, why, you need to read my February newsletter. Now, it just went out today. If you're a subscriber to the Radio Liberty newsletter or a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, if you're not, why, it will be posted on the internet this week at radioliberty.com. That's the February 2007 newsletter. And if you don't have access to the internet and you'd like to get a free copy of the newsletter and haven't gotten one before, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's the February newsletter, and we will take you into what the people who are directing the course of world events say, or have said, into the writings of Alice Bailey, into a very, very a famous book, The Armageddon Script, which describes exactly what is taking place today in the Middle East. Our telephone number again, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back here in just a moment with the second hour of Radio Liberty. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be a reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, for this hour, we're going to be talking to Ron Brown, who's a good friend. He sells gold and silver. He supports Radio Liberty, and we always enjoy having Ron on. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Just fine, Dr. Stan.
Well, let's see. Then things are really sort of moving along at a fairly good rate. Did you see that article in the Wall Street Journal about Professor Alan Binder?
No, I sure didn't.
Well, let me just tell you briefly. I want our listeners all to hear this. You can actually go up in the Internet, the Wall Street Journal page, and pull down the article that was written this last week on Professor Alan S. Blinder, B-L-I-N-D-E-R, Blinder. And basically, this man is a professor of economics at Princeton University, a brilliant man, formerly vice chairman of the Federal Reserve System, a formerly White House advisor, has written extensively on globalism, has really always supported this idea of doing away with tariffs. And, you know, certainly when we do away with tariffs, some people are going to lose their jobs, but then there are going to be new jobs for them, and we'll get them retrained. And there's going to be some losers and some winners, but it's all going to work out. At least this is what it already believed, always believed. And then suddenly he had an epiphany. And he began to count the number of jobs that would be lost. And he analyzed something like 86 jobs, potential jobs in America. And he decided that the United States stood to lose between 40 and 56 million jobs. Now, certainly there are only 20 million manufacturing jobs left in the United States. And we were going to lose 40 to 56 million jobs. Now, he has actually modified those figures. To the present time, he says we're going to lose 30 to 40 million jobs. But these are jobs that, for instance, engineering. Well, most engineering jobs can be done as well in China or India as they can here. Architecture, they can do it over there. Even lawyers, they can do most things for law over there. And simply, he said probably the divorce lawyers wouldn't lose their monopoly here in America, but most of the other lawyers could be replaced. And he goes down the list of all these jobs that can be done elsewhere, and suddenly you're going to have 30 to maybe 40 million, the figure he most likely would be about 40 million Americans with no jobs and no possibility of getting a job except something very, very low paying. And he doesn't quite know what to do. And he basically still believes in doing away with tariffs, but what are we going to do with all these people who can't get jobs? And if you go to the Internet, they have an interview with a Professor Blinder, and he's asked by the Wall Street Journal reporter who's done this article, and this was just, I think it was the 27th or 28th of March, Professor Blinder, why did you change your thoughts on globalism and the advantages of globalism? And Professor Blinder said, I began to think after reading articles on the Internet and seeing what people were saying, and I suddenly realized we're going to have all these people without jobs and no jobs for them. And Ron, you know, this really, I think, is the problem we have today. We've got so many people out there who are not even trying to think. Well, at least we have one professor on Princeton who's on our side. He doesn't have the answers, but he certainly got the problem very well laid out. And when you stop to think, what's going to happen to these 30 to 40, probably 40 million Americans who have no jobs, who are not going to be able to get jobs, other than maybe working at minimum wage, why we're talking about destroying the middle class of America. And the thing is, our leaders know exactly what they're doing today. Well, Ron, you just go ahead and pick the story up from there.
Well, you know, that's basically what we've been talking about for the last 4 or 5 years, Dr. Stan, is the move towards socialism, the move towards one world government. They've been sending all of our jobs and our plants and technology overseas, gutting America. Now most of our jobs are gone, and you can almost see what's about to happen. In fact, I heard a story, I think it was Circuit City or one of these companies laid off a bunch of people and said you can come back in 2 weeks and apply for a job at much lower wages.
Yeah, that was Circuit City. They were going to lay off about well over 3,000 people who were getting $11 an hour, and they were going to hire them back at $8 an hour if they'd work for it. And you know, what are you going to do if you want a job? Well, you know, you're better off with a job with $8 an hour than $11 an hour, but what does that do to morale? And then certainly Citibank announced it was laying off 33,000 workers here in the United States, and business is closing down all over our country. Back in Cleveland, the city of Cleveland used to be an industrial base, 14% unemployment. And, of course, if you believe the government's figures on unemployment, you've got to be incredibly naive. I mean, we talk to people from here in our ministry all the time, and so many people are out of work. A lot of our supporters are out of work and having a real tough time. Are you running into that, Ron?
Yeah, a little bit, but not as much with my clients. I guess most of my clients are already thinking straight about what's going on, so they're more of them are preparing for what's happening than... But yeah, I've had my fair share of people having to sell some of their metals just to save their business, save their house because they lost their job. So I don't know if I could put a percentage on it, but yeah, it's a lot more than it used to be. Yeah. I think it's rather obvious that, I mean, you could take Detroit, for example. Used to be the home of the auto industry, the people making a lot of money there, and you could almost see when this thing hits bottom, that they'll be bringing some of these plants back overseas, back over here, but instead of working for $30 or $40 an hour, or whatever they're working for, it'll probably be $8 to $10 an hour, and they'll be glad to get the job, unfortunately.
And I think what the people have to understand is what's happening is not by accident, it is by intent. It is an effort to destroy the middle class in America and impoverish our people. And until people understand that what's happening is not by accident, there are people of great wealth and power who know exactly what they're doing. It's just that they don't want the American people to know what they're doing. We'll be right back here with Ron. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Ron Brown on the line. We're just talking about what's happening as far as the economy here in the United States, and certainly we're seeing increasingly why people are defaulting on their home loans. In fact, a number of the companies that have been providing these loans to people who never should have been able to get a loan in the first place, a large number of these loan companies are going out of business, and of course some of them are frankly going bankrupt. But the significant thing is that a lot of these big hedge funds, you know, they maybe put $1 billion and they will buy these bundled housing loans that are going to give you guaranteed a 6.5% interest rate. And that's really good as long as everybody's paying their loans. But what happens when people find that the house that they're paying a loan on isn't worth what they're, what they paid for it? And they walk away from the loan, and suddenly that loan goes into default, and then the income from these bonds begins to fall. And then these hedge funds, which many times are leveraged on, based upon these bundle bonds, suddenly begin to get calls, and they can't meet their calls. I mean, they've got, they may have a 20 or 30% leverage, or 30 times leverage based upon these bonds, which really do not have the value that they purported to have. And these people are going to begin to get into real problems. In other words, they're going to have to begin, disinvesting themselves so that they can cover their base. We're finding certainly that the margins number, there's over $1 trillion in margin on the New York Stock Exchange. In other words, people are borrowing money to play the stock market. We have never seen this much debt on margin accounts, in the stock market, in New York Stock Exchange, in the entire history of the exchange. people are borrowing money frantically to try to make money. The hedge funds are doing this. Certainly the carry trade, you know, is trying to continue borrowing you for 0.5% and lending out at 3 or 4%. But all of this is beginning to become unraveled as, of course, the interest rates are rising in Japan. The value of the yen is going up. And if the carry trade begins to begin tumbling down, as the derivatives which back the carry trade begin tumbling down, we could see this whole financial house of cards beginning to quake. What are your thoughts, Ron?
Well, exactly. And every cycle, as you know, our debt structure has become so massive now that they cannot allow it to ever go into a deflation. They must keep it growing. So every cycle, when this thing threatens to collapse, and you know, right now you have the housing market threatening the bubble to collapse on that. Every cycle they have to come in with more desperate measures to try to prop it back up. I was listening to Jim Poplava last weekend, and anyone who wants to hear what he's talking about, go to last week's program on financialsense.com. And there's a big scandal brewing with what's called these naked shorts. And that is the hedge funds, and you mentioned the hedge funds, which is what made me think of this. A lot of these hedge funds are involved in shorting the market, and they, in order to short a stock legally, you have to borrow the actual shares of stock from someone that owns it so you can sell those into the market, and then theoretically you will repurchase the shares to pay back at a lower price. Well, what's happening is they're shorting massive amounts of shares of different stocks, and they never borrow the money, so they're just creating an illusion that they're selling something. They're selling something that doesn't exist. And they're talking about maybe billions upon billions of dollars involved in that. And of course, that's one of the things that's driving some of these companies down, because the hedge funds are just ganging up on them and driving the price down. But more important, and of course, that's destroying jobs in itself as these corporations go bankrupt. But what you're creating is a scandal that's totally illegal. And really, it shows the amount of desperation that they're having to go to just to keep the system from collapsing totally.
Well, really, what's interesting, Ron, is really looking at the monetary figures. And, of course, they keep telling us with inflation running maybe 2.5%. Of course, that includes housing and food and anything else that's going up. They count the things that are not going up because they're simply lying to us. But, you know, according to Bob Chapman, and I think his figures are quite correct, we're dealing with probably 10 to 11% inflation that we know about. But the most interesting thing is they are creating massive amounts of credit. In other words, credit is just almost as good as money. And you can create credit out of absolutely nothing. And they have to keep expanding this monetary base to keep the whole house of cards from coming down. But this is highly inflationary. And this is happening not simply in the United States, but throughout the entire world. And, of course, as you do this, you threaten the stability of the whole monetary system. And the stability of a society is based upon the stability of the currency. When the currency fails, the society fails, which is what's going on in Rhodesia today, where they have 1,700% inflation. And right here, of course, and I was noticing that the teachers' union, whether it was state employees or the state teachers' association, they just got a 20% raise, over a 4-year period. You're talking about almost 5% a year that they're demanding in raises. Does that suggest we have a 2.5% inflation rate? Of course not. So basically, the inflation rate is far higher than they're telling us, and inflation really has to do not with the rising prices. It has to do with increasing the money supply, and it is increasing the money supply that causes prices to rise, not the opposite. So, Sidney, what's going to happen next, Ron? Any ideas?
Just as a side note, you mentioned Rhodesia, which is Zimbabwe. I think it was Jim Willie just before we went on the air, and he was saying 20 years ago the Zimbabwe dollar had the same value as the U.S. dollar. Today, it would take $6 million to buy 1 ounce of gold with the Zimbabwe dollar versus, what, $670 U.S. dollars to buy an ounce of gold. So you can see what happens when a country goes off the deep end and their currency is discredited totally. It just wipes out the fortunes or the wealth or the savings of all of its independence. And talking about something that will destroy the middle class, that's what will happen in America.
And this is really my fear, that this is exactly what's happening. And the average American has no idea what's happening. Well, it's really been very interesting in this last couple of weeks since we've had you on here. The price of gold has really gone up pretty close to about, what, $20 in the last 4 weeks?
Yeah, it was under 640, wasn't it?
As I recall, what was it about? It was, what, 670 today?
673, I believe, is where it closed.
And, of course, I always like to see what's going on in Dubai, and you can see that on Kitco. And I noticed that Dubai has this week been about $6 or $7 higher than the American market. So I noticed this morning that Dubai price of gold was $679, which I think would be suggest that we may be up in that status within a few days. Why is the price of gold going up? Why can't they keep it down? Or is it simply because they're incapable of doing that? They cannot keep selling gold that they don't have. And I'm talking about the central banks of the world doing everything they can to manipulate the price of gold and silver in violation of the laws. But then when the people who run the world break the law, who are you going to complain to?
Right. And, of course, the value of any fiat currency, like the dollar, is simply based on confidence in it. And as our deficits spin out of control, as our spending goes out of control, as our move towards socialism accelerates, and we're now dependent on foreigners to keep loaning us money, what did you say, $3 billion a day we need from foreigners coming
right.
in, at some point, you know, anyone, I don't care whether it's an individual or a business or a church or a local government or the federal government, if you abuse your credit forever, for a long time, eventually your creditors will cut you off. And so that's where we are right now. The world is rejecting the dollar as the world's reserve currency. They're saying we can't continue to finance your folly. And as they do that, then the price of gold starts to rise because people are dumping their dollars to buy something that's tangible and real. And over the last 5 years, the confidence in the paper money keeps going down, and so the demand for gold and silver keeps going up, and we're reaching a breaking point where today, compared to the amount of dollars that are out there, or I'm talking about fiat money, compared to the amount of gold to go around, when this thing really goes into the next leg up, you're going to see a panic because there's no gold out there, or silver especially, compared to the dollars that could chase them. So you could see gold at prices that sound absurd today, but like I try to explain, if the dollar is heading towards zero, then gold and silver and anything you price in dollars is heading towards infinity. And that's what we saw happening in Zimbabwe, where it cost $6 million to buy an ounce of gold. And in Germany, of course, 1923, you got to the point where it cost 36 trillion German Reichsmarks to buy 1 ounce of gold. So as you can imagine, when that happens and the monetary system implodes on itself, then the savings of all the middle class will be wiped out.
But of course, the average American says that can't happen here. I mean, it can't happen here because the government wouldn't let it happen. I mean, after all, my paper money has intrinsic value. How are we going to convince them that paper money has no intrinsic value? Its real value of paper money is zero, because it has nothing behind it. And I think when the American people suddenly realize they've been betrayed by their leaders, that the people of the Federal Reserve have been using the system, the Federal Reserve system, to enrich themselves and to impoverish the American people, I believe there are going to be terrible consequences. Well, if you have a question or comment on this subject, give us a call. The number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here at Radio Liberty. Well, Ron, sitting, I was just noticing what Bob Chapman had said. Margin debt on the New York Stock Exchange is up to a new record, $285 billion. Global mergers and acquisition activity, funded with debt, of course, has just passed a milestone, reaching more than $1 trillion in the last 3 months. Global debt issuance overall is increasing 5 times faster than the world's gross domestic product. Corporate bonds are increasing at a 22% rate. Junk bonds are up at a 30% rate. Leveraged buyouts, according to Bloomberg, are up 40%. And the financiers collecting $2 billion in fees for the first quarter alone. And what we're really seeing, of course, is massive extension of credit. All of this then comes into the market as liquidity. And, of course, eventually, of course, this is going to begin reflecting itself in rampant inflation. It just takes a little while before things begin to... And there's all sorts of money out there. And this is how you're able to have these corporations going around buying up other corporations for $2 billion, $5 billion, for $40 or $50 billion. Where's the money coming from? And it's all created out of nothing. It's all an illusion. But it really doesn't matter. As long as people don't understand it's an illusion, the game goes on. But what happens when people do begin to understand it's an illusion, and when other countries say, we're not going to lend America, the United States, money anymore? We don't like what they're doing over in the Middle East. And I think increasingly we're seeing the alienation of so much of the rest of the world towards our own country. And, you know, right now people use our currency because they like America, because they trust America. But if we were to lose a couple of aircraft carriers over there in the Persian Gulf, if we were to lose a couple of thousand more soldiers over there in Iraq as a result perhaps of a missile attack on our forces, after we attack Iran, what's the rest of the world going to do? I believe both Russia and China supported the United States at the United Nations, did not vote vote against or veto our effort to impose sanctions on Iran at the meeting of the Security Council of the United Nations, because Iran and China want to trap America into a futile war and expanding the futile war in the Middle East. And I've often said I believe Russia and China would love to fight to the last American soldier and the last American carrier in the Middle East. And what would happen if there was a military disaster there? What would then happen to the value of our dollar? What are your thoughts on Iran?
Well, you know, in fact, it just came out recently, you know, the excuse for going into Iraq was the war what do they call them, WMDs?
Weapons of mass destruction, right.
Right. Now, just recently, apparently the government has admitted that the real reason for going over there was for energy. And, of course, that also explains what's happening in Iran, too. But it has more to do than just energy, because Iraq, before we went in, they announced that they were going to quit pricing their oil in dollars and start pricing in euros. And 3 months later, of course, we went into Iraq, and now Iran's doing the same thing. So it's also about control of our status as the world's reserve currency. So we're just having to do more and more desperate things because everything is starting to unravel, and at some point it'll just fall apart. So
hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And Ron was just saying that he believes a large part of the reason we went into Iraq was for the oil there. And you remember the name that George Bush gave to the military operation when we went into Iraq? It was Operation Iraqi Liberation. Operation Iraqi Liberation. And of course, if you think of that, that's Operation O, Iraqi I, Liberation L. Oil. That's what it was all about. It was a code name. Now, I don't believe it entirely is that. I believe, of course, it was a much larger a purpose than simply oil. I believe, of course, that there are spiritual forces that really want to expand this senseless war in the Middle East, and of course drag America deeper and deeper into a quagmire over there. And I really tremble for my country when I reflect that there will be consequences for all the people who've died there unnecessarily, both Americans and Iraqis, and I fear before too long, Iranians as well. The United States cannot pay the debts of our current war. We are having to borrow, as Ron had said, between $2 and $3.5 billion every day from other countries. And, you know, if we, what happens when they stop loaning the money? Well, then, of course, what happens is the Fed simply monetizes. Now, what does that mean? That means they simply create money out of nothing and massively expand the money supply to create the money to pay off the debts that we incur every day. And as we expand this war, where's the money coming from? Nobody ever asks. They tell us how much better the debt is this year than it was last year. Why, the federal deficit's only going to be $247 billion. Isn't that great? But, of course, what they never mention is all the money they steal from Social Security and Medicare that should be going into a trust fund. But even more than that, they don't include the price of the war in Iraq. That's off budget. That's an off-budget item. And since the only way they could get enough people to vote for the legislation was to put in about $20 billion worth of pork and what they call earmarks. That's another name for pork. Those are simply bribes to the congressmen to vote for legislation they want. Why, you know, all that money someday is going to have to be paid for. Either that, or we write everything off, or we destroy the value of our currency, and we start in all over again. And I would tell you today, ladies and gentlemen, there is no way that the United States government can ever meet its obligations. And if you doubt that, I suggest you go upon your internet and you Google in David Walker, G-A-O. And David Walker is the chairman of the General Accounting Office, the G-A-O. And you can go to the G-A-O General Accounting Office and to get the material that David Walker has come up with. And he will tell you, we are a bankrupt nation. He's the man in charge of accounting in the United States. And he had a wonderful talk he gave on 60 Minutes. I think it was about 2 weeks ago. And you can get that off the internet. And basically, he points out that right now we owe at least $50 trillion in all of the money that we have committed to pay out in the years that lie ahead to the baby boomers. And there's simply no way we can meet those obligations. Have you read that material put out by David Walker from the GAO?
I read excerpts of it. I think I read someone summarizing it. I didn't read the actual article. But, you know, I was quoting that the last time we talked. He said our deficit, true deficit the last year was, I think, $4.6 trillion.
That's right. That was the real deficit. The one that the president uses was $247 billion, and the one that Chris, the head of the General Accounting Office for the United States was $4.7 or $4.8 trillion. Maybe George Bush really just hadn't, maybe got the figures just a little confused.
Now they're using the cash accounting so they can fudge the figures a little bit. As I explained earlier, that'd be kind of like going out to buy a Mercedes-Benz for $100,000, putting a $5,000 down payment on your books when you got home. You said, well, I only spent $5,000. The reality is you spent a lot more than that, especially if you financed it. So that's what they do to make it look better than it is. But, you know, as we talk about this massive inflation and it gets so involuted, it's hard to get a handle on it. Probably one way to make a little analogy of it is once you get into an inflationary environment in a society, people learn to adapt to it. So for the, and let's take the real estate industry. The last 5 or 6 years, people learned to play the inflation game. So they would go out and buy a house, and they would take the equity and use that to go out and leverage another house, and then they would, you know, there's people out in California that have 5 or 6 of these houses, and as long as the value of those houses was going up, then
hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Ron, why don't you go ahead and finish that thought? You were just saying as long as the value of those houses was going up, everything was great.
Yeah, inflation works wonderful, or leverage works fine as long as it's going your way. But as we're finding, all leverage situations, all inflationary bubbles eventually reach a point where they can't keep going up anymore. And when the real estate bubble started to pop, all of a sudden you're seeing areas around the country where you know, they're down 30-40% in value. And so you can imagine what's happened to these people who were leveraged in two or three of these houses, or they borrowed all the equity to buy a new Mercedes or whatever, and now all of a sudden their houses are worth a lot less than they owe on it. And they're kind of like, they're trapped like a deer in the headlights. What do? You can't sell your house because you couldn't come up with the money to close. So it's sad what's happening to an awful lot of families that were a year or 2 years ago just happy as larks because everything was going right. Now all of a sudden it's turned against them and that leverage is eating their lunch.
Well, I think, Ron, the trouble is that most people don't understand the monetary cycles. If you're on the right side in a monetary cycle, whether you're building homes, whether you're buying and selling homes, really almost, when the market's going up, why, of course, anybody can invest in the market, and they get to thinking they're pretty smart. And then, of course, well, gee, I'm making this, all this money in the market, but if I just borrowed on margin, I could buy twice as many shares, and I could make twice as much money. Oh, boy, and so you do it, and things are really going well. But then, of course, when the market turns against you, why, of course, you find out the other side of the coin. And you find out that there are two things that drive the market. One is greed, but the other is fear. And when the fear sets in, you begin to act irrationally, and you suddenly realize that you stand not only to lose everything you've made, you may lose your home, you may lose your insurance, you may lose your car, and of course an awful lot of families I know that have broken up because of this greed and fear cycle. And greed drives people to do things that are just totally irrational. And if you think that you can outsmart the market, why, of course, you're a lot smarter than I am, and I've been trying this for some 75 years. Now, better off to understand, everybody, what's going on, get yourself into a defensive position, and especially at this time in history, prepare then to batter down the hatches, because I think the storm is coming. The tsunami is certainly on the horizon. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ron Brown. And Ron, would you like to get out your telephone number, your website? Well, I don't think you have a website, but anyway, get out your telephone number and tell people how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to.
Okay, my telephone number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561. I have a package of information I put together, so anyone would like a free copy, just feel free to call me, and I'll send it out to you. And just feel free to call me and ask me any questions you have about gold and silver, because a lot of people have never invested in it before, and it's kind of a scary thing for them. But I'm convinced if people don't learn to think outside the box and get away from the traditional investments that they've always depended on, they're going to get wiped out.
Well, Chris, I read what you'd written recently about silver. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about it? Because we have several people on here who talk about monetary things, but you're the only one who really is, of course, primarily bullish on silver, and you think it's a far better investment than gold. Why do you think that? Because certainly gold has always been the traditional refuge in difficult financial times.
Well, gold and silver, if you go back through all recorded history, gold and silver have been treasures of every society. You can go back 1,000 years before Nebuchadnezzar, whoever that was, and gold and silver were the treasures of that society. Well, by definition, a treasure is something you hoard, you don't consume it. So you could literally document that throughout all history, the world has literally been accumulating more gold and more silver above ground. Each society would produce and then pass it on to the next and the next and the next. And that started to change dramatically with silver I'd say 150 years ago, and that is because of its unique attributes, silver became irreplaceable in an industry as technology began to develop. So let's go back to the 1850s when they developed photography. Silver is the best conductor of light, so it became irreplaceable in the photographic industry. Then in the 1900s when electronics was developed, silver is the best conductor of electricity, so it became irreplaceable in electronics. So throughout the Industrial Revolution, the industrial demand for silver exploded as they found more and more applications for its use. By the 60s, by early 1960, the industrial demand competing with the monetary demand for silver as money, because that's what silver always was in the world, became a tight equation, and it started to force the price of silver higher. And when that happened, and then, of course, Lyndon Johnson back in 63 had to make a decision, and he came out, well, he didn't make the decision, someone made it for him, but he came out and did what? He demonetized silver, dumped all the silver, that the monetary silver that we had, into the industrial market. The whole world followed suit, so in one fell swoop, the bankers and the governments of the world dumped 4,000 years of silver accumulation into the industrial market, saying, you guys can have it all. We never liked the discipline that silver put on our monetary system anyway. So they glutted the world with silver. They say up to 10 billion ounces of silver. And what that did was force the price ridiculously low. And so for the last 60 years, the world literally has been consuming its seed corn. Now what was 8 or 9 or 10 billion ounces of silver 60 years ago, we're down to the dredges, and most experts say there's a lot less than 100 million ounces, or excuse me, less than a billion ounces of silver in the world. And at the very moment we're reaching the bottom of that silver glut, it's coming at the point when people are losing confidence on all paper money, not just the dollar. All the currencies of the world are inflating like crazy. And when people lose confidence in the paper money, they seek the refuge of what's been money throughout history, and that's gold and silver. So the monetary demand for silver is about to explode to the point, I mean, think about it, $15 billion will buy all the silver in the world today, and yet $15 billion won't cover yesterday's deficit. So we're just to the point where the shortages is about to really be exposed, and when that happens, the price of silver will explode, just as it did back in the 70s when it went from $5 to $52 an ounce in 1 year.
So you're much more optimistic then about silver than you are about gold.
Well, in fact, I did a little some calculations before we came on the air, Dr. Stan. If you want to, I'll go over them real quick.
Go ahead.
If you go back to January 31st, 02, and I use that as my starting point because that's when the dollar index peaked at 120, and you compare the performance of gold versus the Dow Jones versus silver versus the dollar through 3/30 of 07, which is just ended this last month. The Dow Jones was about 10,000 on the Dow in 02, January of 02, and on 3/30 it closed at 12,440. So you can say, wow, I've had a 24.4% increase in the Dow Jones, but that's 5 years. Now, if you compare that to gold, gold was $282 an ounce in January of 2002, and at the end of this month it was $663. So the gold has risen 235%, while the Dow has risen just 24%. Silver, on the other hand, has gone from $422 on those same dates to $13.45. Of course, it's $13.75 today, so I'm not using the latest figures. But that's a 318% increase. So you can see silver has performed even better than gold, but gold has done a heck of a lot better than the Dow Jones. And then if you look at what the dollar has done, the dollar in that same period has dropped 31% of its value. So you can see the Dow has not even kept up with the devaluation of the currency. So that's the phantom crash I talk about. People think they're making money when in reality they're losing purchasing power.
Amen to that. Well, let's go to Eric, who's calling us from Compton, Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Doc. How are you doing?
I'm doing just good. Fine. Just good to hear from you.
Good. Same here. Hi, Mr. Brown. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine.
Got a question for you.
Okay.
I know someone that just came recently to possess a complete a set of Hamilton minted ingots. Can you explain to me what an ingot is?
Well, that's just a gold. Are these gold or silver?
It says something like minted in 24-karat EGPR 999 fine silver.
Okay, so...
Whatever that means. Can you explain that to me, please?
Well, it's just a bar of silver. What size is it? How many ounces? Does it have the ounces on it?
No.
Well, how big is it? Is it 12 inches long? Is it 2 inches long?
I would say it's about 2 inches long.
All right, fine. Maybe about 100 ounces or so, something in there.
No, if it's 2 inches, that sounds like a 10-ounce bar of silver.
Okay, go ahead.
A 100-ounce bar would weigh about 7 pounds.
Oh, no, no, no. No.
That's fine. It sounds like a 10-ounce bar.
Right, okay.
So what would it be worth about, what, $140, $150 today?
For a complete set?
Well, you have a set of them, just one of them.
The whole set.
And how many of the sets?
Ooh, about 20 or 30, I guess.
Okay, so just multiply it times, I'm guessing it's 10.
Yes, it's small.
10 ounces, so just multiply 10 ounces, tell them how many bars you have, and that gives you an idea how many ounces you have.
I think maybe Eric would like to know, is there any collector value? Because they're a complete set of them, and there really wouldn't be any collector value in those, would there?
No. No, those would be just what we call bullion. And they're basically going to go for the silver value.
Okay,
anything else, Eric?
No, just nice to hear you guys. Just nice to speak with you. I haven't talked to you for a while.
Nah. Okay, good to hear from you. Okay.
Still listening, though. I am out here listening.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right,
bye-bye.
Fine. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Paul calling from Ohio. Paul, did you have a question for Mr. Brown?
Just a gun and a handful of silver, isn't it?
I'm sorry, what?
I was just joking around, Dr. Stan. How bad of a beating did the dollar take against the euro today, Ron?
Against the euro, it's lost about the same amount as the dollar index. I follow the dollar index and not the euro, because the dollar index is, 8 currencies. But I think the dollar's dropped about the same amount against the euro as it has against the dollar index.
Is it below 80? Is the dollar below 80 yet?
No, it's at 82.93, I think, as of today's close.
The euro's about, 142?
I think it's about 120, isn't it, somewhere in there?
To be quite honest, I haven't been tracking that recently to see if I even have it on my...
What would you recommend, Ron? Would you recommend just a little bit of silver when this thing falls apart to have? Or
I think Ron is suggesting that you'd be well to invest, primarily in silver, have some gold, but it depends on how much money you have. But, I mean, if you can invest in silver, because he thinks it has a higher potential for upswing than other things. Now, remember, nobody can say for certain, but Ron's analyzed this for a long time, and he's very bullish on silver. He thinks it's a great potential investment. Would that be a fair statement, Ron?
Absolutely, and I think gold is a wonderful investment, too. In my mind, the only thing wrong with gold is it's not silver. I believe that, see, right now the gold-to-silver ratio is right at 45 to 50 to 1. In other words, the value of gold is 45 to 50 times the value of the silver. I think before this is over with, in fact, in 1980, the ratio went down to 17 to 1. I think this time around, since we're basically have consumed all the silver, that ratio could go to a minimum of 10, and I wouldn't even rule out 5 or 6 or 7 to 1. So in a sense, silver should outperform gold at least fivefold, maybe as much as tenfold.
You think that the gold might take a drop again anymore, or do you think that's all history?
It's always going to be very spastic, because that's the only game the bankers have left to play, to make it so volatile that it scares the timid away. Plus, I would imagine that countries like China and other ones who want to exchange their dollars for gold will go along with any manipulation attempt to drive the price of gold down, then they just buy it at cheaper prices. So we're not going to have, in my opinion, a collapse like we did back in May, because that was the end of the first leg up of the bull market in gold and silver. See, silver went from like $4 and something to $15 May a year ago, while gold went from, what, 250 to 730. Well, at that point, the bankers of the world had to come to the rescue of the dollar and suppress the price of gold, and that's when they busted.